This is the Mickey Miles and More podcast, your one stop for information on Disney races, Disney vacations, Disney theme parks, and more. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles and More podcast, Chris Eliopoulos and Mike Scopa.
Welcome back, Milers. I'm Chris Eliopoulos, your host, and with me, as always, is, as I was reminded I didn't say last time, the Dean of Disney, Mike Scopa. Mike, how's everything going?
I'll give a little shout out to my former shortstop, Leo Cloutier, who pointed that out to me. He said, you know, make sure that Chris introduces you, the Dean of...
I tried to mix it up a little bit, but I guess that's not allowed anymore, huh?
You know, and you have these people listening to us all the time.
Weren't you the doctor for a while? You were like
Dr. Scopa's magical elixir.
Yeah.
I actually still have a couple of hats and shirts that have that on there because some listener to another podcast said that he was in distress until he had the Dole Whip.
There you go.
To save him.
We might have to bring that back. We'll have to make up some new shirts or hats or something. But
yeah, I'll send you a what it looks like. Okay. So if you forgot.
Anyway,
we got some stuff today. Not too many things, the news, but I think there are three things I looked at. I thought it would be important to mention to our listeners. Again, these are things that I pick out because I think that it's good to inform people of things that they may not be aware of. And one of the things that we've been talking about the last 2 weeks, Chris, has been, you know, all the Christmas stuff going on down there. And this past week, the Disney, the 2023 Hollywood Studios special Christmas show, Christmas party, Jollywood Nights, made its debut, and it has not been received too well.
Really?
Yeah.
What about it made people not happy?
Well, one of the things is that you can get into the Rise of the Resistance queue once during the show.
Right.
You can get in the queue, and the attraction broke down. Pardon me?
As it does a lot.
Well, yeah. Well, here's the thing. You're paying $179 per person to get into that 5-hour access to whatever.
Yeah.
And I think it was down for an hour. So there were people who were complaining about that.
Sure.
That particular debut night, the weather did not
cooperate.
It was raining. And I guess a lot of places where you could usually duck into were closed. Like, I think the shops were closed, so people were getting wet, and there was complaints about that. They have
because Disney controls the weather, right?
Oh, that's right. They had the big Disney Dome. Yeah. They had some shows. One of them is called Holidays in Hollywood, and the big draw there is supposed to be the Muppets. And from what I saw and understand, it was just Kermit and Miss Piggy. At least that's all I saw. And they were on stage for just a brief amount of time. So people were concerned about that. The other thing that was mentioned in one of the comments from someone who was there was that a lot of the shows took up time. You wanted to get a good spot. You want to watch it. It lasted so long, and it took away from if you wanted to do an attraction. And I don't know which attractions were there. So that was kind of something that I don't know if I would blame Disney for it. I think you, as a guest, you need to figure out what you're going to do. Yeah. And if you're going to that party to do attractions, well, you're paying a little bit more than you would for a normal day.
Yeah.
But I would go just for the holiday thing. So that was something. They introduced this new character called Jolly. Ollie, I think it's called Ollie, and he was a cookie, and that didn't go over too well, too. So that was not, you know, a good debut. We'll see what happens. I think that, you know, there's always going to be
it. It's new, right? It's a whole new production. It's a whole new situation, right?
I think it's a little bit. I think they had this last year, but they've changed it a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, they always learn from these things and they try to do better as they go along. But yeah,
yeah.
I feel bad for the people who were like the test dummies in the first few nights where they're like figuring it out and not enjoying themselves. I mean, it's weird. I would think that, you know, Disney's thing would be to then now say, well, then fine, we won't have Rise of the Resistance at all if it's going to cause problems.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's an easier way to deal with it than, you know.
The thing that some people were commenting on, they have this projection show on the Tower of Terror, and people are wondering why they don't do it. The Chinese theater, I would call it Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway. And I'll have a comment on that later in the show as to why that's going on like that. But, you know, in summary, the first night was not received too well. So we'll have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
The dates in November and December are beginning to sell out. And people who are going down hopefully have already gotten their park reservations in. Epcot for New Year's Eve is sold out. Wow. So anyone who wants to make that park reservation, they can't do it. Although Disney is saying, hey, you know, if you're a hotel guest, though, that particular bucket is sold out. If you're a if you're just a regular day ticket guest, you're sold out too. But if you're an annual pass holder, you can still get in.
That's
partially true though, because as we talked about in our last show, Chris, there are four tiers,
right,
for our annual passes, and the only tier that will allow you in Epcot is the Incredipass, which sells for about $1,449. So I don't know how many people have that. But so number one, you have to have that if you want to get into Epcot between opening and 2 o'clock. But you can still go there after 2 o'clock. So I don't know why they're broadcasting, Limiting. Hey, you know,
yeah,
it's sold out. So that I wanted to make mention of that. And again, it's a reminder of everyone, you know.
Oh, speaking of which, making reservations, I just was my opening came up this past weekend for our dining reservations for Marathon Weekend. So,
oh, were you going to dine?
So we're going to do, what are we doing? We're doing Trattoria Al Forno on Boardwalk. And then what did I pick? I picked out something down in Disney Springs. I forget I have to look.
That Trattoria Del Forno is good for breakfast too, Chris.
Yeah, well, you know, we wanted to, for the night before the race, we wanted to carb up, and that tends to be, and we're not, I think I mentioned this, we're not staying, we're not going to go into the parks while we're there.
Right.
And we just decided that we're going to go onto the boardwalk and then go to Disney Springs. If I can find where we're going, I forget where I said I was going, but what are you going to do? Let's see. Oh, the City Works Eatery and Poorhouse on Friday night. So,
have you ever been there?
No. Is it bad?
Michelle and I would give that a thumbs down.
Really? Why?
Yeah. I just think that we just didn't think that the quality of the food was that good.
So we might have to change it?
City Works,
Michelle's giving a thumbs down back there.
So, what are you looking for
honestly,
cuisine?
Well, honestly, Friday night is, we were just going to do something light. We weren't really going to do a full on dinner. We're just going to kind of snack a little bit. Cause it's a half marathon in the morning and, you know, we do that without even worrying about it. So we're not carving up or anything. We were just going to, I mean, if worse comes to worse, I can cancel it. We can do something. We can go like the,
Wine Bar George
Splitsville
would be,
or something like that.
Splitsville Wine Bar George would be. There is another restaurant that it's pretty much on our rotation. It's just beyond the Coca-Cola building. Mm-hmm. It's right across from the Chicken Guy. It's Wolfgang Puck. You could get a little thing there. You can get a nice meal there, but I think that's a hidden gem in Disney Springs. But to be honest, and you know, you have to be honest. We really didn't like City Works. Okay. So
interesting.
Plenty of choices for beer, but you know, that's about
right.
it.
That's it. Well, my sons might like that. Who knows? I don't know. Although they're not really big beer drinkers, so not even real drinkers, but So we made our reservations. This past weekend I hit 18 miles on Sunday. So
awesome.
We're getting there. So, but all right, sorry to interrupt.
There early. No problem.
You know what it is? I'm trying to make sure that I am strong enough for this race because I have a lot going on right now and a lot going on right after the race. So I don't want to break down after the race and then go on a tour for 3 weeks injured or something like that. So I'm trying to make sure that I'm in good health and strength, you know, have strength and stuff. So, all right, buddy, what's next?
Earlier this year, one of the great Imagineers of all time, Raleigh Crump, passed away. And so he's had his hand in a lot of attractions in both Disneyland and Disney World, and in the 1964 World's Fair.
Right.
There has been a special effort to pay tribute to Raleigh Crump. And within the last week or so, it was done in Disneyland and in Disney World, Walt Disney World. And it took place in the Haunted Mansion. So now, if you go into the Haunted Mansion, and well, at least in Walt Disney World, when you go through the attic, if you look to the, I believe it's to the left of the dune buggy, there is a suit of armor that's leaning up against the table. On the table is a very small figurine, and it's known as the Candleman. And that was designed by Raleigh Crump for the Museum of the Weird, when the Museum of the Weird was the very first thing that was supposed to be what now is the Haunted Mansion. So, and so it's a little candle man. He's dripping wax and everything. He's looking right at the dune buggy, and it's a tribute to Raleigh Crump. So just thought I'd mention it to anyone who's going to be in Disney World and want to see something new. So that's happened. There's a couple of upgrades that were planned for the Haunted Mansion. One was the hat box ghost too.
Right.
And Madame Leota is getting a
facelift
grade two. Yeah. Something. Yeah. Facelift. So, thought I'd mention that, but those are the three things that I noticed this week that I thought would be of interest to our listeners. So, you know, I'm trying to figure out what would be interesting to talk about, and especially I use you as my target audience.
Oh, good.
Over the years, when I run into people, they ask me as if I would know the answer. Hey, Mike, why is this? Why is this that?
Right.
In Walt Disney World. And over the years, I've talked with cast members. I've talked with Imagineers. I've talked with directors. I've talked with a whole bunch of people. And I've come across some information that I thought I'd like to share with everybody. And so it's going to be framed this way, Chris. I'm going to give you the question. And then I'm curious to know if you have heard the answer.
Okay.
So I said earlier that the projection of the Christmas show in Disney's Hollywood Studios is on the Tower of Terror, and it's no longer on the, it's not on the Mickey and Minnie's Railway. I'll call it the Chinese Theater. Okay. Mm-hmm. And during this summer, Michelle and I noticed that there were no fireworks anymore. Do you remember the Star Wars show that they used to be? That was pretty awesome with all the fireworks.
Amazing. Yeah.
Not anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
So the question is, why are there no more fireworks, big time fireworks, shown above the Chinese Theater in Hollywood Studios? Do you have any idea why? I finally found out why.
Yeah, I mean, I remember they had the stage. They put that makeshift stage in the front, and they were doing stuff there. I mean, my guess would be that it would be seen from Star Wars Land, and they don't want to do that. I don't know. I mean,
you're pretty close. Well, behind, if you were a drone and you were flying in front of the Chinese Theater, and you went up and you went straight back, you would probably end up somewhere in Galaxy's Edge, are on the edge between right on the edge of Galaxy's Edge and Toy Story Land.
Right.
That area was built up, and because it was built up for those two lands, they had to remove two launch areas that used to be used for the fireworks.
Interesting.
Now, and they moved that pretty far back, and they took a lot of land. As a matter of fact, when I was down there this summer, I remember driving, and I don't know what the name of that highway stretch is, but I actually could see the back. While I was driving on the highway, I could see the back of Galaxy's Edge. So the front has got, you know, mountains and stuff. Yeah. And in the back, it's just flat. It's like
flat.
So that's why. So there will be no more fireworks above the Chinese Theater. Yeah. So that was disappointment because I really loved Sorcery in the Sky. Right. And the Star Wars thing was
outstanding. I loved the Star Wars one. I thought it was a great.
Yeah.
It was a reason to go there at night for me, you know, to go check it out.
Yes.
I mean, I know a lot of people go over to Fantasmic and maybe that's their thing, but yeah. I wonder, you know, they keep talking about the old Star Wars, the hotel there, whatever it was called, the cruise line.
Star Cruiser, yeah.
I wonder if they're going to start doing something with that over there. Like if they turn it into a hotel, maybe they do some fireworks over there. Who's to say?
I don't know. I just
they could celebrate Life Day. You know, they have to do a Star Wars Life Day thing. Do you know what Life Day is?
No, I don't think I do.
So back after the original Star Wars movie came out, they came out with a holiday special. They called it, and Chewbacca was celebrating Life Day. And so I think it's December 16th. I think is the date of when the show comes out. So every year, Star Wars fans celebrate December 16th as Life Day. So I would like to see. Some special fireworks over there.
You never know. I do recall that they seem to have more shells firing off for Fantasmic than in the past. So maybe they're trying to make it up with that. But that's why we don't see any fireworks.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, here's another question. You've been to Disneyland in December or November or
Probably when I was young. We used to go, actually, it was funny, as a kid, my father worked for American Airlines, so we could get free airfare. And so in Jersey week, instead of going to Florida, we would go out to Disneyland. So we would be out there in November. But I don't know if I've been in there. We've only been there, I think, once with the family, and that was for the Dumbo Double Dash, which I don't remember what month that was in. Was it February? Was it soon after the marathon? I don't remember.
I don't remember, but I was that.
Yeah, you were there too.
There was an orange. I think they gave out orange shirts. I forget.
The Dumbo was a red shirt. I have that one still.
Red shirt.
Yeah.
Anyways, the reason why I asked you that was I wanted to. I don't recall if you've ever seen the Nightmare
Before Christmas.
Christmas overlay.
Yeah. No, I haven't.
So. It is outstanding, and it makes that attraction feel like it's the first time you've seen it.
Yeah.
So after seeing that, the next time I was in Walt Disney World, I started looking for whomever I could that was behind the scenes, that was in the know. And I said, why don't we see an overlay in the Magic Kingdom for Nightmare Before Christmas? And I was told that that attraction would not be able to handle the extra electrical requirements, and it would have to be shut down for a long time, and they called it the electrical harness, so the electrical grid would have to be completely redone. And I felt like saying, so what? Is there any project that's too big for Walt Disney World? And I never got an answer, but the answer I got was that it would
financially
take,
the electric structure would be too much.
Apparently it's okay in Disneyland, but it's not there. So that was the reason. But it's really a shame if you've never seen it. So
I know it's sort of like, that's the thing, is they tease you with stuff what you could get and they don't give it to you. So you sort of just, I mean, a lot of people don't care. I mean, a lot of people don't know about it. Most casual fans wouldn't know that there's a holiday overlay in the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland. But the fact that they don't have it in Disney World doesn't really affect them because they don't see it. So,
Yeah. You don't know what you're missing. So,
yeah, but we do.
We do. One of my favorite spots in Disneyland is in California Adventure, and it's Cars Land. And in Cars Land, maybe my favorite ride in Disneyland is Radiator Springs Racers.
Yes.
And I wanted to know why we don't have that in Walt Disney World. And this was a long time ago. This was well before Toy Story Land. This was well before Galaxy's Edge. It might be as much as 10 years ago. I sought out some people in Disney MGM Studios at the time, and I asked, and this is what I was told by one of the older cast members. I always go to the old ones because they, and this made sense. In Walt Disney World, we have the state of Florida with a high water table.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why, well, that's not one of the reasons, but it's a reason why they got to be very careful with certain attractions.
Sure.
Years ago, I don't know if you're aware of this, Chris, but years ago, Sunset Boulevard was where they had the original Hollywood of the Stars Theater, where they have Beauty and the Beast. That was where the opening of Sunset Boulevard is. That used to have a sinkhole. They fixed it up. They kept on fixing it until it finally worked. And then they said, okay, now we can open up that that street. But the reason why I say that is that Florida's got some weird things. And the high water table was the reason I was told that Cars Land and Radiator Springs Races would never be put in Florida, because if you go through Radiator Springs Races, you know how quickly the audio animatronics work and the hydraulics work, and a lot of that machinery is underground.
Right.
So with a high water table, they did not want to take a chance. Someday maybe they figure it out, but they would have to actually elevate the land as they do in the Magic Kingdom in order to do that.
Yeah.
But that was the question I had, and that was the answer that I had. So
that's wild. Yeah, I mean, you can imagine it sinking. You put in this whole new attraction, and thing starts to sink into the ground. I mean, And I'm sure, like you said, with the animatronics, they gotta lock those into the ground like deep, so that they don't move. And because we saw what happened with the Yeti, you know, it starts cracking the foundation if it's not in there strong enough, and you know. With these things jerking around there, it tends to be a little.
And you never know until you actually run the thing and burn it in, so like you burn in computers. So.
And you remember, you got to do it like, you know, 15 hours a day, every day.
Yeah.
You know, it wears out quick.
Yeah. I was told by a friend of mine who he did, he used to do the Splash Mountain, the Big Thunder Mountain. He would drive VIPs on Main Street USA. He worked the riverboats. He worked everywhere. And he told me about, he said, Big Thunder Mountain Railroad. He said, you should ride it twice during the day. I said, what do you mean? He said, you should ride it during the first hour of the day and then ride it during the last hour of the day. I said, Jimmy, why? He said, you're going to get a different experience because the track actually kind of loosens up a little bit during the day.
Interesting.
And when they, at least back then, they would walk the track at night and tighten all the bolts or whatever. So that's what I was told. Wow. I don't know how true it is.
So it like really is like you really are flying off the railroad.
Yeah. A little bit more airtime probably. So,
Wow.
Well, actually more shaking probably.
Yeah. But probably like a little bit more loosey goosey.
That was interesting. You may know the answer to this one, Chris.
Okay.
You know, when you're walking through Epcot and let's say you're walking and you're walking near Mexico.
Yes.
You're walking near Mexico and you see a couple of cast members coming and you're thinking, wait a minute, I'm in Mexico. These people are dressed like they should be working in Norway. Or you're walking in Canada and you see somebody who's
Great Britain or something.
Yeah. It's like, wait a minute, how come I see that here? However, if I'm in the Magic Kingdom, I will never see a Fantasyland cast member in Tomorrowland or vice versa. Do you know why we see them in Epcot, but we don't see them in
Well, I don't think there's no utilidors down below Epcot, right? So there's certain entrances and exits that they have to go to out into the back. So they have to stroll through the park itself.
That's the answer, Chris. There are fully developed utilidors in Magic Kingdom. There are partial utilidors in Epcot. They are below Spaceship Earth, and they go out a little bit to Futureland, but that's the reason. So that's why we see
Hey, I mean, you can put it in your own head like that. It's just people from different countries taking a stroll through other countries, you know. They're touring. They're touring the world.
They're touring. This one, you may know, I think I may have talked about this in previous shows. Mm-hmm. You know how we see, we'll have an attraction in one Disney resort and all of a sudden they'll stop popping up in others. Tron.
Yeah.
Is now, you know, in the United States. There are a lot of attractions, but there is one in particular that had been planned for all the Disney resorts, but those plans were put aside and shoved in a drawer, I should say, and it's Mission Space. Do you know why Mission Space, plans to put Mission Space in other resorts have been kind of put on hold?
The only one thing I can think about is early in its appearance was that a little kid died on the ride, I think, at some point. And that's why they have the two different versions now. It's to make sure that there's not somebody who could possibly be killed in the machine. But I don't know. I maybe they just don't like it. I don't know. What's the reason?
I don't recall if it was killed, but I know that there was a lot of distress reported from guests, and that's why they had the green side and the red side or whatever. It's a very powerful centrifuge. So because of all the problems and people actually vomiting as they came out of the attraction, Disney decided we need to put a halt on this. So as far as I know, that's going to be the only Mission Space attraction in the world.
And that's the reason, because people were just getting sick
and people were complaining about it. Yeah. I don't know how many people ride that. I mean, I don't know what the capacity is for that thing, but
yeah, it was interesting. We went when the kids were little, we had a test. I wanted to see if they could go on it. And so my wife sent me on to test it out. And the interesting thing is I'm on blood pressure medication. And in the morning when I take it, if I go on, let's say like Rock and Roller Coaster or even on this one, I get nauseous. Like I do get sick. I don't throw up or anything, but I feel gross. So I came out, I'm like, nope, ain't doing it. Which is funny because later on, as they grew older, like we're going on the orange one. You got you old people go on the green one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, it was an early lesson. I walked out. My wife is like, yeah, you look green. We're not going on. I'm like, thanks. Maybe that's why they call it green. If you turn green after going in the orange, you have to go on the green lane next time.
It could be. I think there are people who are claustrophobic too. That too.
I think some people are. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've seen people walk off. I've seen people just get up to it and just be like, nope, can't do it. Plus they had sickness bags. They used to have sickness bags in there. You could open up a drawer and there was like a little, so they knew what was going on.
Yeah.
Well, hey, you know, it's unique to Disney World. Sometimes there's attractions like Mr. Toad's, which is unique to one park and you leave it at that.
Well, you know, I think that it's good that they think before they do, you know, they give an attraction a few, they give it enough time to break in and see how it's received and they make a decision. And for the most part, you know, that seems to be the best thing to do rather than, you know, spend a lot of money and then have to
regret
it. regret it. This one thing I learned a long time ago, and I think a lot of people may know it, but I thought I still think it's very interesting. When you walk through Walt Disney World, if you walk through Disneyland, if you walk through, let's say, the Magic Kingdom, the Castle Forecourt, and they have all these beautiful trees, you never see a diseased tree. You never see a sick tree. You never see a dead tree. And do you know why you never see one of those?
Well, I would assume at night they're always taking care of these trees, and if something starts to go, they probably pull it and replace it with a similar one they've gotten out in their gardens out there.
That's basically it, Chris. I've been told that there are two or three sibling trees for every special tree in Disney. And a special tree is a tree that is really not planted in the ground. It's planted in a box.
No.
And the box is, so when a tree is deemed as being diseased, they will bring in a helicopter. I was told this by a security guard who worked there at night in the Magic Kingdom. He said, yeah, one night I was over the castle, came this helicopter and with all these chains, and they lowered it and they hooked it up to the to something below the ground, and they lifted up a tree, and the tree was in this huge box, and they carried it away. And then about a half an hour later, they brought in a new tree and about the same size. So
yeah,
as guests, we don't notice that, but that's, they have this huge tree farm. And I remember driving by there with some insider, maybe about 10, 15 years ago, and just a huge tree farm. So,
yeah, I was going to say, I wonder if they try to revive that tree, replant it somewhere and try and bring it back and keep it, or do they just let it go? And, you know,
I don't know. I think they may let it go. Yeah. So
okay, Elsa, let it go.
Let it go. A couple of years ago, there were changes made to Magic Kingdom and Disney Hollywood Studios. I think it was called Disney Hollywood Studios at the time. And it involved the curbs and the sidewalks in both those parks. Mm-hmm. And what happened was that the corner curb area of the sidewalking area was planed down so that they were ramped down into the street. Mm-hmm. They did this for Disney Hollywood Studios and they did this for Magic Kingdom. Do you know why they did that?
Two things I could only think of. Either it's for those ECVs or the strollers or whatever, or water runoff.
Well, I think the first answer you gave is part of it. But there was another reason. There was a parade. I forget the name of the parade that was coming from the West Coast to Disney's Hollywood Studios. And when they were planning to come, they noticed that the parade vehicles, floats, were going to be kind of dangerously close to the curb. So the areas where they would make turns, they actually widened the curb and they flattened it out. So.
Interesting.
So that was the case. Yeah.
Just
yeah.
For parades.
Yeah. Let's stick with parades. I got another one for you.
Okay.
Years ago, the parades at the daytime parades at, I believe the daytime parades at Walt Disney World used to go clockwise, and the nighttime parades used to go counterclockwise. And then eventually, all the parades now face the same way, but there's only one parade in Magic Kingdom. But when, I mean, the Festival of the Fantasy Parade during the day goes clockwise, and that the not so scary parade like Boo to You and the Mickey's Very Merry Christmas Parade, that goes clockwise. Why did they change it from going counterclockwise to clockwise?
I have no idea. I mean, my only guess is to get the vehicles back into the where they need to be, but I don't even have an idea.
I think it's twofold. One I know the reason. The second one is speculatory on my part. But there was a problem that developed when you had a parade going towards the castle, and that was, if you think about it, when you're walking towards the castle, it's a little bit of an uphill battle. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And a lot of the floats would especially in the summertime when it would be raining or whatever, and the ground would be wet, those floats had a tough time of negotiating up, and they had to be pushed or pulled. And what they, even though some of them are, they're actually driven, right, they had trouble. So that was one reason. And the other reason I'm thinking about is that by lining them up the same way, they can put the batteries on the parade vehicles, for the lights and everything, much easier. But that was, I know the first reason is true. The second reason, you know,
Sure.
Especially in the town square, they had a problem making that turn and then starting up Main Street USA.
Right. Interesting. Okay.
The last interesting thing I came across this, and if anybody's out there who has watched this season's Behind the Attractions, you would know the answer, but I looked a little bit further into it. There is an invention that was made by, some people say Walt Disney, other people say it was the Disney Imagineers. There's an invention that first appeared in Disneyland the first year it opened.
Right.
And that invention is something that you and I and everybody sees every day of the year. It's an invention that first appeared in Disneyland. Do you know what that invention is?
That appears?
Yeah. So we, in everyday life, we come across this invention, I want to call it.
In our real lives, that something was invented in Disneyland that's now.
I think I saw one today, and I'm sure that if you go out, you'll see one.
Oh, gosh. I don't know. Lawnmower?
No, it has a lot to do with Walt taking a walk one day, and as the story goes, he bought a hot dog in Walt Disney World, and as he's eating the hot dog, he's looking around and walking, and he got about 27 to 30 feet. There's a little discrepancy as to exactly if it's 27 or 30 feet, and he said,
"You wanted to throw it away?"
But throw away. He said, "Look, we should have trash cans, about 30 feet from each trash can, whatever." But then he said, went to his custodial department. He said, I don't want trash in this this park. I don't want people to see trash. Can we figure out somehow to do away with that?" And they invented the swinging trash can door that, you know, you push and you drop in the trash. It started in Disneyland.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm always afraid to touch those because they're probably gross, but that's just me.
So I want to pay tribute to our friend who passed away earlier this year, Jim Corcus, who talked a little bit about this. And Jim knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
He talked to a guy by the name of Wayne Culver, who opened the Walt Disney World Custodial Department when the Magic Kingdom debuted in 1971. And Jim asked him about the trash cans. And Jim said that Wayne said the general guideline for parks, streets, and pathways is approximately one trash can for every 100 feet. He said this is highly variable and subject to conditions. So it can be 30 feet or 27.
Right.
He said, for example, the areas of the Epcot promenade, the spacing is further apart. However, as you approach vendor carts, outdoor food and beverage areas, and more crowded zones, the spacing is denser, so it's closer together. Jim finishes this off by saying, for quick service food locations, the standard is roughly one can for every 40 tables. The standard has changed very little since opening in 1971. But that was something that I saw the other night, and I thought, gee, that would be something interesting to mention to Chris.
Yeah. And then they always have people walking around picking up trash that falls to the ground to keep it neat as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I just remember the story. We were at Disneyland when we were little, and my sister was in a stroller, and my parents had gotten her popcorn.
Yep.
And as she was eating it, one fell out, and, you know, one of the custodian guys came up and swept it into his little bucket. She must have seen him do that and thought it was a game, so she kept throwing the popcorn out as we were walking around one by one, and this poor guy was following us around, picking up each individual kernel as they came around. So my sadistic sister. Already testing the Disney custodial department.
And as we all know, you cannot buy gum in a Disney park.
Although you will still find it in places. I still come across gum on the ground or somewhere. But they are quick to get rid of it once they see it. So,
yeah, they have a certain way of getting rid of it too. They steam it, or I forget exactly how they get rid of it, but they
have Goo Gone, whatever that stuff is called.
Goo Gone. Maybe that's it. That's it.
Yeah.
Let's see. Do I have anything else before we move to the tips? Let's see. Oh, the only other thing I wanted to mention, and again, I may have mentioned this before, years ago, when you came out of Magic Kingdom, I'm not sure about Epcot. I think Epcot, all the parks, there used to be when you used to go to the bus terminals to take your bus back to whatever Disney Resort hotel you went, at every stop, there would be, well, like for this bus or for this hotel bus, there would be monitors mounted and they would tell you what's going on. Or maybe be some marketing going on. Hey, you have to see this attraction. You have to see that attraction. I would say sometime in maybe 95 or maybe around the turn of the century, they removed all the monitors from all the bus terminals.
Right.
Why do you think they did that?
I don't know. I mean, the last time I was there, I saw that they had like a listing of all of the buses and where they are actually located these days.
Like they have like a one big board that tells you that. Yeah. Yeah.
But I don't know why they would get rid of it all.
A little bit of history on this. One day, I was staying at the Wilderness Lodge, and I said to my son, let's go run. So we ran from the Wilderness Lodge down to the Magic Kingdom. And we actually, this is like at 6 o'clock in the morning. We ran through the turnstiles. We ran in Tony's Town Square. We ran around and we came back. And I noticed that the bus terminal area had all the monitors were going. It's 6 o'clock in the morning. There's nobody around and the monitors were going. So I found a friend of mine who was a show director at that time. And I said, I don't understand. Why are you running the monitors when there's nobody around? He said, think of it this way. You're in Florida. This was in the summertime. You're in Florida, a lot of heat, a lot of humidity. Mm-hmm. If we turn those things off, there's going to be condensation. You're going to have moisture in there and those monitors are going to go. Wow. So we got to keep them going all night long. So eventually I think they felt we don't need monitors. We just get rid of them and let's put the big board. So
yeah, interesting.
That's why they're like that. So a lot of interesting things like that.
The summer, Florida summers seem to be really detrimental, or even just the land itself is really hard to work with. It seems with Disney, with the, like you said, the soft ground, the sinkholes,
heat,
the condensation.
It's a challenge. I remember talking with one cast member who said the biggest problem in running a Walt Disney World theme park with attractions is water. It says water destroys everything. And we're always looking. He particularly worked at Splash. And he said, you know, we have to keep checking all the time. All right. So that's a little fun things that I thought would be good to talk about. Now let's move on to some tips. Some of these may be familiar. Some of them may be new, old, just reminders. But these are things that I always mention to people who are going down just to say, hey, don't forget, this might work out for you. Water is very expensive down there. A bottle of water is, what is it, $50 now or whatever. So, So what I recommend to people, and I think you do this, Chris, when you go down en route from the airport to your hotel, you stop off and get things like, and I think a case of water is a good idea to get because a case of water probably costs you the same as a bottle of water in the parks. Now, when you get to your hotel room, I would stick as many water bottles as possible in the freezer, not the refrigerator, the freezer. You want them solid, solid, solid. So the next day, taking a bottle of ice and you're putting it in your backpack and you're going to the parks. You'll always have cold water with you. And it won't cost you an arm and a leg. So that's something that I always recommend to people.
I would also say I bring a reusable water. Like I use the metal water tins that you just bring with you. And they're reusable. And you can go to any station and pick up your – they'll give you water for it. So
they will in ice or whatever.
Yeah. But, so that's another
choice. You know, again, these tips are designed to save money, save time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to go into a line to buy water.
Right.
Saves money. This is something that I prob people are probably sick and tired of hearing it, but it's something to be mentioned all the time. And that is that it's so expensive to go down there. You have to figure out ways to save money. So sure. For anybody who's planning a 5-day vacation, you know, check in on a Sunday night and check out on a Friday morning.
Yeah.
If you stay overnight on a Friday, if you stay overnight on a Saturday and possibly on a Sunday, you're going to pay an extra, I don't know, 5 or 10% more for that night stay. So the room racks
the weekends
go up
are tough.
On the weekends. Yeah. Yeah. So just something to keep in mind.
Definitely.
Back in 92, I used to tell people to do this, and I think it holds today. If you are in the Magic Kingdom during the daytime parade, take note as to when the parade is, and you want to do some of your favorite attractions, because the lines will be short at that time where people will be lining up for the parade. So about 30 minutes before when a parade starts, go to your favorite attraction.
Yeah.
You're probably going to have a shorter line there. That's very important. And with that, I'd also say that recommendation also holds for fireworks. Well, you know, Chris, if there were going to be fireworks, people start establishing their standing position,
yeah,
you know, 30 minutes beforehand. So if you're going to be in the Magic Kingdom more than once during your stay, all right, this particular night, we're going to go to Space Mountain. We're going to go Big Thunder. We're going to go here or there. Yeah. So,
With the fireworks, especially, like we've done Epcot. And when the kids were little, you got to be careful. Like we would set our spot. We would sit down. We would hunker down. We would wait like a half hour ahead of time. And there are always those people that show up at the last minute and push right past you and stand in front of you. So you got to be a little diligent when you're there. Make sure that you do get that little front spot. I mean, I literally remember we had our kids sitting at the fence and we stood up, and this woman and a child, it was a grandmother and a kid. They literally walked through the crowd, pushed right in front of us and stood in front of my kids.
Wow.
At the fence, because they had kind of backed up a little bit. So just be aware of your surroundings also when you're going to see these fireworks.
Yeah, you really do. My last tip involves how park reservations work and how you could use their particular policy to your advantage. We all know that you can park hop after 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
So my suggestion, and I'll just use this as an example. When we ever go to Epcot, we do not do Spaceship Earth right off the bat. If we're coming through the front. Because everybody wants to do that. That's the first attraction. And there's a reason why it's in the front of the park, because they want to slow the crowd to go in here and there. Slow the roll. So if you can keep this in mind when you intend to go to another park, or you intend to like to ride Spaceship Earth, I would get in the queue around 1:30.
Yeah.
I would get in the queue around 1:30, 1:45, because there are people who are leaving who are trying to get to their next park, and there are people who aren't coming in from the other parks yet.
Right.
So the queue line for a thing like Spaceship Earth or any attraction may be lower, 1:30. Again, the same thing with the fireworks. You know, think about where people are going to be and think about where they're not going to be. Yeah. So I recommend looking into doing attractions around 1:30 to see if it may not work for all the attractions, but I think most of the time it's going to work. I know it works for Spaceship Earth, because every single time you walk in when the park opens, and it's a 40-minute wait already, 30-minute wait.
But it's interesting, because you think at these days in Epcot, people race to Guardians or the Remy ride, you know, the Ratatouille ride, or they want to go on Soarin', or they want to go over to why did I just totally blank on the car ride? Test track.
Yeah. Well,
so like I would assume that the people would be racing to those attractions, but yeah, it like you see Spaceship Earth right there and you're like, oh, got to go in. I think a lot of people do that.
Well, the thing with the Remy ride is that you're right, but the World Showcase isn't open till like 11, I think.
But can you not get in? I mean, I remember maybe because we stayed on property, we were able to get in those like it opened up a little bit early for us and we got into the ride. I forget the exact situation at the time.
There are parts of World Showcase that are open. I know that from Great Britain through Canada, that's open before.
Yeah, you can walk by. Yeah, you can walk through, especially from the World Showcase entrance in the back. They'll let you walk through it, but nothing is open. For some reason, I remember they had like early hours for hotel guests, and we were able to run right onto that attraction. But yeah.
Well, the very first time I went into Epcot, they were the whole park was. This was a long time ago. Yeah. The park was open. The entire park opened at 9 o'clock. Yeah. And I remember walking right through Future World, getting on a boat, going over to American Adventure. And Lonnie, bless his heart, was working at that time. I think he's retired now. The guy used to run American Adventure. Mm-hmm. And I think my family was about, with four of us, and there were no more than 25 people. But you can't do that anymore.
No.
Those are the tips.
All right. Nice job. Well done. So that's going to wrap it up for us this week for the Dean of Disney. I'll say it again. Mike Scopa. I'm Chris Heliopoulos. We'll see you in the parks and on the road.
We hope you enjoyed listening to today's episode of the Mickey Miles and More podcast. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles and More podcast, this is Rick Gregg saying thanks for listening and all your support. And until next time, we'll see you on the road.